Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com. Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 330 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, sends you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
Oh, hearing the captain again puts a smile on my face.
And the captain.
We're talking about three films tonight. Thor, Ragnarok, we got Bad Moms, Christmas, and Atomic Blonde. All recent releases and trailers for The Post, I, Tonya, and Game Night. Our first film, though, is Thor, Ragnarok.
Well, I really wish I had my hammer.
Hammer?
Quite unique. It was made from this special metal from the heart of a dying star. And when I spun it really, really fast, it gave me the ability to fly. I used to spin it really fast, and it would pull me off the...
Oh, my God. Hammer pulled you off?
The ground. It would pull me off the ground up into the air, and I would fly.
You rode a hammer?
No, I didn't ride the hammer.
The hammer rode you on your back?
No. Every time I threw it, it would always come back to me.
Sounds like you had a pretty special and intimate relationship with this hammer, and that losing it was almost comparable to losing a loved one.
It's a nice way of putting it.
In Marvel Studios' Thor Ragnarok, Thor is imprisoned on the other side of the universe without his mighty hammer and finds himself in a race against time to get back to Asgard to stop Ragnarok, the destruction of his homeworld, and the end of Asgardian civilization at the hands of an all-powerful new threat, the ruthless Hela. But first, he must survive a deadly gladiatorial contest that pits him against his former ally and fellow Avenger, the Incredible Hulk. This is the 18th film in the Marvel Studios, Phase 3, Chapter 6 now, and I gotta tell you, this might be my favorite Marvel film of all time. This is an outright comedy. I loved every frame of this movie. I felt like I had seen a VHS movie that I'd never seen before. I mean, this honestly was like something that Canon Film wished they could have produced back in the day, but has the intelligence, and I just thought the comedic writing that was edged upon in Spider-Man Homecoming and Guardians of the Galaxy. But really, what a year for superhero movies. I think I was so tired of them, but this has reinvigorated me and regenerated the franchise too. I think this is the best Thor movie and probably the best Marvel movie. What'd you think?
Yeah, I just think it's absolutely incredible what the power of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because really, looking back at Iron Man and Thor 2, and throughout Phase 1, Phase 2, Phase 3 of this thing, you really see them reinventing themselves, and especially with this Thor. I mean, compare Thor 3 to 1 and 2, and this is a completely different movie, completely different side of Thor. Incredibly funny, great action, really nice story in here. I love that they didn't get bogged down with any kind of a love relationship here with Valkyrie and Thor or anything like that. You know, it's just a very quick moving yet funny movie that takes time to give you a chance to revisit characters like the Incredible Hulk. You know, Mark Ruffalo, Bruce Banner wasn't just some pop-in type character. You know, they really actually used him.
I agree with you. I think this is also brilliantly written from the point of view of that they saw the I think that part two is the weakest. Part two of Thor and part three of Iron Man are the weakest entries in the Marvel canon so far. And I think that they did a great job, like you said, reinventing the whole thing and rewriting this as a comedy, as a 1980s throwback. Mm-hmm. Jeff Goldblum here is great in this movie. He is just as fun as Loki was in The Avengers. I think Loki is great in this. The A-list celebrity cameos really were fun during the recital scene there with the dramatic actors. And Chris Hemsworth, who knew he had this kind of comedic chops? I know he had some throwaway lines. I thought he was terrible in the Ghostbusters movie, but really comes into his own here. Not only does the franchise come into its own, but its lead actor becomes a movie star. I feel like finally he is what they say he was going to be. You know,
I mean, I agree. Finally, here's another movie, the franchise, hopefully going forward. And this is their idea, because I absolutely love the Guardians of the Galaxy's movies. And this brings us exactly in line with those. And now I can see, the future of where we're going, how they're going to bring Guardians of the Galaxy. And they're going to fold this universe in on itself yet again, you know, and it's just... it just blows my mind. Like how can you do this? How can you keep reinventing yourself and continue on with these hits? I thought for sure superhero movies would have their time and be gone, but no, they're apparently very adaptive.
And they're thriving at the box office. Now, what do we got next?
All right, next we have Bad Moms Christmas.
I'm Carla's mom.
Hi, Isis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
Hi. You must be Amy's mom. I'm Carla. Jackson, honey, mama needs more hooch.
Ooh, good idea.
Yeah. That's my son, Jackson. This is my mom, Isis.
Hello, Ruth, like Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Isis, like the terrorist organization.
This is my mom, Sandy.
Oh, Amy, oh, I've heard so much about you.
Oh, boy, you really have the same haircuts.
Hello, I'm Ruth. I'm Amy's mom.
Jesse, I was literally just in the car with you.
All right, A Bad Mom's Christmas follows our three underappreciated and overburdened women as they rebel against the challenges and expectations of the Super Bowl for moms, Christmas. And if creating a more perfect holiday for their families wasn't hard enough, they have to do all of that while hosting and entertaining their own mothers. By the end of the journey, our moms will redefine how to make the holiday special for all and discover a closer relationship with their mothers. Here we have the returning three bad moms, Mila Kunis, Kristen Bell, Katherine Hahn. All fantastic. Love them. Their parents, or their moms, Christine Baranski, Cheryl Hines, and Susan Sarandon. And really keeping with the bad moms thing, all the moms, including our three main moms and then their moms, are all bad. So I have to say, I do like that. But overall, I did not find very much laughs. If any in this, there is a waxing scene that I thought was absolutely hysterical and I liked quite a bit, but the rest of the movie is just so cliche and feels very, I don't know, 90s made for TV type comedy. Am I wrong?
No, I could agree with you more. I think you pointed out everything, including the highlight of the film, is the waxing scene. And the problem with this movie is it's just not funny. We talked about Thor and it being a comedy. Thor is funnier than Bad Moms Christmas, and that's a problem. They must attempt 200 to 300 jokes in this movie, and really two times I laughed, and one was with the waxing sequence, and the other was in the clip you just played where Mila Kunis' mom couldn't get her boyfriend's name and what his whole role in things was right. And so that was somewhat amusing. But this thing is flat. It's badly written. This has all been done before with the one parent who's a gambling person, one who's over-controlling, one who suffered a loss and wants to be closer to the daughter. I haven't seen Daddy's Home 2 yet, but if it's even similar to this, we're in for a bad problem. This movie has 9 montages. There's more montages in this movie than in a Rocky film. This was the same problem with the first movie. I thought it was not funny. I thought it was strained even at 95 minutes, and I don't see the appeal of this franchise. It doesn't matter. And can we retire the slow-mo walk of these badass characters doing this debauchery? They're not that funny. They're just drunken and irresponsible. This whole hangover subgenre has got to go.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, especially with the montages. They just have – the montages often have no connection to what's actually happening in the movie, and the moms often go off the hinge in these montages, and it against their characters, really. It doesn't really make me like them in any way for how they act and stuff. But through a lot of the movie, I felt like I was watching outtakes and bloopers, and there's a lot of jokes that people say that seem to have been come up with on the spot and dun, 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 just trying to riff here and there. And there's a lot of laughter that seems to be real, which I do like sometimes. But in this case, like I say, it just feels like I'm watching a blooper.
To me, I got the same impression that it was not – whatever was happening wasn't on the page, and they were trying very hard on set to make it happen. And it was amusing while they were on set, but it didn't translate necessarily to the screen. And out of all the moms, the only one that scored for me was Baranski. And even that was in small doses. I mean, Peter Gallagher has probably the most thankless role in the entire movie as Kunis's dad.
God, they really sidelined him, and he's great.
I don't know why he even took this. And really, it's a thankless role for all the women involved, too. I mean, none of them come off as the strong characters that I think that they're reporting to be. I just think that this whole thing is somewhat misguided and really a poor imitation of the Hangover movies at this point. And like I said, not bad, just irresponsible. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. What's our next movie here? Our next movie is Atomic Blonde.
Someone set me up.
someone from the inside. MI6. CIA. Everyone's involved. Now, this only ends one way.
All right, an undercover MI6 agent is sent to Berlin during the Cold War to investigate the murder of a fellow agent and recover a missing list of double agents. This is from David Lettich, the man who was co-director of the John Wick series. And if you thought that series was style over substance, you ain't seen nothing yet. Atomic Blonde is beautifully shot, has a great soundtrack and some fantastic fight scenes. Charlize Theron proves that she is no shrinking violet, but this movie is completely style over substance. The story has been weak, has been done. I'm so tired of these double agent knock list out in the open type things going on. I mean, this is so old hat that it's not even funny. It looks beautiful, although I think a little too stylized in some sequences. It's like a Nicholas, the guy who did Drive and Only God Forgives. It reminded me of that with the overuse of the red and all that kind of stuff. But Theron is great in this role, but she's left out hanging, I thought.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I see your point on this. I really loved the look and the soundtrack alone. This is a great, mm-hmm. It's a joy to watch. I will say that. But the story leaves a lot to be desired, and the twist at the end, you can't see coming, and I thought it was kind of confusing the way they pulled it off. You know, is this person good? Is this person bad? Is she good? Is she bad? Who's they working for? Who's this person working for? And after a while, it's like, okay. And when they finally explain it, it's like this whirlwind of just nonsense. It's like, oh, goodness me. And I really never, they didn't make a good use of this list, you know, and they didn't really ever explain to me what exactly the list was, you know, and who was then on the list. And then, you know, it was just very confusing. Felt like they were trying to trip you up and make a storyline here where there really wasn't one that existed. It's just this girl who goes to, basically Berlin in the Cold War and beats some people up and gets beat up and then that's it.
I didn't mind a little bit of that. And I liked the setting. I did like that it was set during the days right as the wall was going to fall. It was interesting to see McAvoy doing his, what I thought was a Brad Pitt impersonation from Fight Club with the shaved head and the kind of outfits he was wearing. But really, this was just John Wick light to me. And that's not a knock because it has a female lead. That has nothing to do with that. It's just because this has been done now and this is becoming a type of action movie. I didn't think it was anything special.
It's better than John Wick 2. I will say that.
Oh, no, it's not.
Oh, yes, it is. John Wick 2 is terrible.
John Wick 2 has the same problems this movie does, though.
No, John Wick 2 is worse. John Wick 2 is so far out there that it just doesn't even make sense, even in its own universe. But the first John Wick is fantastic, you know, through and through. And I wish that they could recapture that and recreate that, but they don't seem to. Lich here just doesn't seem to be able to do that.
I could see why this director was chosen to do Deadpool 2 at this point, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, style. If he gets handed a script like Deadpool 2, I think he's going to be fantastic in it, you know, because he's not going to have to worry so much about that side of the story side of things. Let him just be a stylized director, and I think you're going to wind up with a good movie.
I think that what he can do right now is stylized thing. This guy's a former stunt double. Trevor and I had the pleasure of interviewing Daniel Bernhardt a while back, who appears in this movie. I don't know if you caught that as well. Did you catch him with the blonde hair assassin?
No.
he had a fight scene with Theron there. But he had done a short film with Lettich, who was Brad Pitt's stunt double, and that film translated into John Wick at some point. So it's kind of an interesting world that they've created,
yeah.
And they can do very well in that world from a visual standpoint, but I want something from a story standpoint once in a while.
Let me ask you something. Did you feel like the fight scenes were a bit over-rehearsed?
I will say this. The fluidity of the fight scenes in this were not nearly as good as
right?
John Wick.
And you can see her prepare to swing, take the swing, land the swing. Like, you can see the motions that she's going through. It feels way over-rehearsed, just too...
Yes. It feels like a dance in a way. Like, there's nothing spontaneous about it, like you said. No. But at the same time, there were a couple times when I thought, you know, I was like, is that a stunt double? And then they pull, you know, she pulls the thing off and they're real to be her. Yeah. And I was impressed at the athleticism.
Well, she's great. She's just one of those captivating actors that can really just pull you in any situation, you know, any frame of any film, and you kind of get pulled into Charlize Theron there. And she does that in this movie as well.
Well, this is her third attempt at being an action heroine, and I think her most successful one still is Mad Max.
Oh, yeah.
No. Mad Max. Jesus. All right. Let's do trailers.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
All right, and our first trailer today is The Post.
So, can I ask you a hypothetical question?
Oh, dear, I don't like hypothetical questions.
Well, I don't think you're going to like the real one either.
Do you have the papers?
Not yet.
This is a devastating security breach that was leaked out of the Pentagon. The most highly classified documents of the war.
The Times says 7,000 pages detailing how the White House has been lying about the Vietnam War for 30 years.
The way they lied, those days have to be over.
Okay, people are concerned about having a woman in charge of the paper. That she doesn't have the resolve to make the tough choices.
Thank you, Arthur, for your frankness.
Let's do our jobs. Find those pages.
You're talking about exposing years of government secrets.
Is that legal?
What is it you think we do here for a living, kid?
Ben, I might have something.
It must be precious cargo.
It's just government secrets.
The New York Times was barred from publishing any more classified documents dealing with the Vietnam War.
If you'd publish, we'll be at the Supreme Court next week.
Meaning?
Well, we could all go to prison.
To make this decision, to risk her fortune and the company that's been her entire life, well, I think that's brave.
If the government wins, the Washington Post will cease to exist.
If we don't hold them accountable, who will?
We can't hold them accountable if we don't have a newspaper.
Nixon will muster the full power of the presidency, and if there's a way to destroy you, by God, he'll find it.
I'm asking your advice, Bob, not your permission.
She can't do this.
The legacy of the company is at stake.
What will happen if we don't publish? We will lose. The country will lose.
What are you going to do, Mrs. Graham?
All right, Steven Spielberg directs Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks in The Post, a drama about an unlikely partnership between the Washington Post's Katharine Graham, here played by Meryl Streep, first female publisher of a major American newspaper, and editor Ben Bradley, here played by Tom Hanks, as they race to catch up with the New York Times to expose a massive cover-up of government secrets that span three decades and four U.S. presidents. The two must overcome their differences as they risk their careers and their very freedom to help bring long-buried truths to light. This bows December 22nd. I think this just looks like Steven Spielberg at this point, doesn't it?
Yeah, this looks like Oscar bait. I hate to just brush it off like that.
Stuff. Well, Streep and Hanks and Spielberg, right? Kind of just feels like this would be the movie that those three would make.
Yeah, it's interesting that Streep and Hanks have not paired together on screen, and they both have been combined like 70 movies at this point. And of course, it's under the direction of Spielberg that they finally get their shot. Just the one sheet poster of this with them walking up the steps of the Washington Monument there is so beautifully done, and everything's so artistically done about this and so delicate. But this, like you said, is right in the Spielberg wheelhouse of. It looks like Bridge of Spies. It's just a historical. When did he become the chronicler of history?
I was just going to say, he's the last real kind of director making these types of movies, right? Because this is a very 90s type movie to make. And he's still making these. Whereas you look at other people who are doing things like this, like, you know, Ben Affleck or George Clooney or anything like that, they have kind of a twist on them, or, you know, they're either a little dark and weird, or they're very modern. And this feels a bit aged.
Yeah, this feels like something that could be from Alan Pakula back in the 70s, you know, or Stone used to do these things. Oliver Stone used to be kind of infamous for recounting these historical things, but at least he had an artisan's view on it. I mean, it pissed off some people. It may have enraged some factions, but it was almost like a hallucinogenic retelling of a 60s event. And this is just looks so cut and dry that I hate to brush it off like that. It just looks boring, straight up.
It's very different than the other things. What was the one with Ruffalo and
Spotlight?
Spotlight, yeah, right. But that seems very modern, more of a modern version of something like this. This feels very proper and very majestic or cinematic, I guess, in that sense, which is something Spielberg and Hanks both, and Streep, I guess, as well, came up doing, you know. So it's just, I don't know, is it old hat?
It's a confusing trailer in that it says it spans 30 years and they show the technology going back and forth, but they never really tell you when the time period is, when the timeline that we're seeing and what what is going on. And so if you're not familiar with the story, which I'm not, I don't have any reason to see this, you know.
This is apparently has something to do with the Vietnam War. But over three decades, I'm fairly confused as well.
I still think the best movie ever done about a newspaper or like a journalism deal is The Paper, the Ron Howard movie back in the early 90s with Michael Keaton. I think that's the one that sets the standard. I don't think they do these very well. Even Spotlight, is a good movie, but it's not the great movie. I didn't think it was the best movie even of that year.
Yeah, but with that, you're talking about content, right? And that's something that is current, I guess you would say. This doesn't feel very current, I guess. I don't know.
Even if it was current, even if it was about WikiLeaks, they tried that with Snowden. things right now, it doesn't seem like we need this. And I prefer him do this than give me another biographical thing on a president.
It's not only the movie, it's the release date, December 22nd. It also just everything. Feels like that's the prime kind of awards corridor, like the end of that, you know. So this is like a movie that's definitely attempting for Academy Awards, and it just has that exact feeling. And I don't know, it seems like
it feels pretentious. Call it what it is. All right, let's talk about Game Night.
Tonight, we're taking Game Night up a notch.
Oh, boy. Mm.
Someone in this room is going to be taken, and it's going to be up to you to find them.
It's a murder mystery party.
Whoever finds the victim wins the grand prize. You're not going to know what's real and what's fake.
Wait a sec. You can't just come in here and break the door.
Looks so real.
Hurting asshole! Help me, please!
Guys, make sure you get a piece of this cheese. Oh, it's just
the first one that follows us gets shot.
Okay, Roger that. You drive safe.
I've always enjoyed the camaraderie of good friends competing in games of chance and skill.
Do we follow him?
It seems like him.
Ryan, you go first.
I'm scared.
Lou.
Not a joke. People are in real danger.
Is this gun real?
Oh no, Annie.
No.
Blood!
I hate Game Night!
Oh, shit. So we'll take a little bath. Oh, it's so much worse.
Wait, I have kids at home.
Not with an ass like that, you don't.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes! Oh, no, he died! This is instructions on how to remove a bullet. You didn't have rubbing alcohol, so I got you this lovely shard.
Good idea. Way to pivot.
And then a squeaky toy.
For the pain.
That's smart, huh?
I love that bit there at the end. All right, we have Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams stars Max and Annie, a couple whose game night gets out of control and kicked up a notch when Max's charismatic brother Brooks arranges a murder mystery party complete with fake thugs and facts federal agents. But when Brooks gets kidnapped, it's all part of the game, right? The great cast here, Bateman, McAdams, Chandler. I think this movie is going to, if they can tonally get this correct, I think the gold standard here is Peter Berg's Very Bad Things with the comedy and the darkness. And this is obviously going to be more of a lighthearted comedy than that. Something like Rough Night, you know, was something I think that kind of straddled this line too unsuccessfully. But I think this trailer is fucking hilarious. What do you think?
Yeah, it was a decent trailer. I don't know that it was all that funny. I feel like the problem with movies like this is that you run the risk of there being no heart in this, which basically means it's going to be a lot of kind of weak jokes and things. I feel like this idea can get played out pretty easily. It kind of does in the trailer on its own. And I don't know. I mean, you mentioned Rough Nights and everything. This has a March 2nd release date. That has a January release date. So it's kind of being dumped in that comedy. We're not so sure if this is going to do so well area. And it does feel like one of those. It feels like a kind of like a date night comedy, you know, the actual movie date night or any of those types of movies, you know.
Well, to be fair, no release date in the last year, year and a half has been kind to comedies. So none of them have done That's very true. Well. But this does, I think, well, first of all, Cock Blockers, which is coming out in the same general area. Yeah. This looks funnier than that.
I mean, I'm gonna agree with you on that. This does look like the more professional, higher end version of that. But it still feels like those kind of get grouped together, in my mind anyways, as the same type of comedy. You know, something that doesn't really create characters that I necessarily want to revisit, or doesn't, you know, there's not really a universe here that I care about, which is fine, but it just means that it's a one-off. Nothing. Could still be a fun time, but just not anything that is going to grow on you in any sense.
I think that if, like I said, if they can get this right tonally, I'm in for it. If not, this is going to be a long sludge through unfunniness.
Yeah, well, Rough Night was terrible, so let's hope that they and it doesn't seem like they're going that route. It feels more like they're going the Cock Blockers date night route rather than the other.
Eh. Which is a smart move.
All right. Up next, we have I, Tanya.
The haters always say, Tanya, tell the truth. Tanya. There's no such thing as truth. Everyone has their own truth. I was the best figure skater in the world at one point in time.
You call that a clean skate? Stop talking to her. That girl is your enemy.
Waiting for the
Jeff was my first date ever. And my mom came.
You need to see a wholesome American family.
I don't have a wholesome American family.
Nothing's ever your fault. I was embarrassed for you.
My entire life, I've been told I wouldn't amount to anything. And you know what? Maybe I would.
Never could believe the things you do to me.
4.8.
How do I get a fair shot here?
We also judge on presentation.
We're gonna need it. Even the playing field. I know a guy. Shouldn't even be saying his name. Derek.
The press wanted me to be the pile of crap. I never did this.
What is going on?
We're with the FBI.
They know something.
What can you tell us about Tanya Harding?
I don't know a Tony Harding.
Aren't you her bodyguard?
As a kid, did you ever love me?
I made you a champion, knowing you'd hate me for it. That's the sacrifice a mother makes.
You cursed me. America, they want someone to love, but they want someone to hate. I mean, come on! What kind of friggin' person bashes in their friend's knee? Who would do that to a friend?
Oh,
right. Based on the unbelievable but true events, I, Tonya is a darkly comedic tale of American figure skater Tonya Harding, here played by Margot Robbie, and one of the most sensational scandals in sports history. Though Harding was the first American woman to complete a triple axel in competition, her legacy was forever defined by her association with an infamous, ill-conceived, and even more poorly executed attack on fellow Olympic competitor Nancy Kerrigan, played by Caitlin Carver. I will be honest with you, I did not get the teaser trailers for this. I even read the news on this and then saw pictures of Margot Robbie and didn't get it. I fully get it now after seeing this trailer. I think this looks absolutely amazing. And Margot Robbie is just incredible in this. We played the Green Band trailer. I recommend you watch the Red Band trailer. It gives you a much better idea of what the movie's actually going to be like. Because this is not only darkly comedic, this be rated R for sure.
It almost reminded me of Fargo in a lot of ways, you know, with that
sure.
kind
well,
of...
It says Goodfellas, right, in one of the things, like the Goodfellas of whatever type of thing. So, yeah, Fargo, Goodfellas, right?
Like the Fargo of sports movies in a weird way. Craig Gillespie, I want to say he did Million Dollar Arm and a couple other sports films along the way in his career. And this movie with Margot Robbie, like you said, first of all, she's a chameleon. And for being such a beautiful girl, it's hard to say that because she does the – I hate to say – the ugly up routine here where she dulled mm-hmm. down her looks in hopes for an Oscar bid like with Theron did for Monster and a couple other actresses have done. But she doesn't seem to be doing it just for the Oscar bid. She actually seems to be embodying this character, and it's going to be a funny movie. But also, I had a high – you know, my bar for expectation on this is high because I saw the 30 for 30 doc a couple years ago on Tonya Harding, and it was so compelling and interesting that this movie's going to have to be something special to compete with the actual story. I mean, mm-hmm. the documentary is so interesting. These people themselves in real life are so caricatures almost that they would fit into a movie. But if this isn't done right, once again, it's going to be a bomb. But having seen this trailer, I'm just growing in confidence that this is going to be something special this award season.
Yeah, I love the idea of going into the fiction of this story and to the outrageousness of it, and her even saying, you know, I never did this or this or that, like kind of exploring those realms could be the thing that brings it just one step further, especially into a cinematic storytelling experience than something like a documentary.
And make her a sympathetic hero in a weird way. Make this character at least – because in the documentary, there isn't a lot of sympathy for her because she is not a person that generates a lot of empathy is the best way to describe it. If you've seen the documentary, you know what I mean. And she's deeply narcissistic in a lot of ways, and that's based on a lot of trauma that she experienced at the hands of her mother in growing up in this competitive environment, which this film is going to be hinting at and showing in quite detail. But the whole – characters involved in this it's just ripe for movies, and I hope they mm-hmm. do this right. Like I said, I think this is going to be something special, and that we'll be talking about this in February when Oscars are being announced and handed out.
Yeah, I have to agree as well.
All right, let's recap tonight's show for the reviews here. Trevor and I both agree that Thor Ragnarok is amongst the best of the year, would you say?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, I think so, too. We both agree that Bad Moms 2 is not worthy of a recommendation. I didn't think it even lived up to the low bar set by the first one. Did you think it excelled?
No, yeah. It tore down everything the first one accomplished, which would be a feat in and of itself, really.
And I can't imagine that they would want to pursue. I mean, it's doing well at the box office, but further adventures.
You know, I went in the theater that I saw this in, people laughed at literally every joke. So I don't know if it's just me, like I'm just not the audience for this or what, but I have no clue.
I wouldn't say I'm not the audience for it. I just think it's hard to make a good Christmas movie on top of these bad movies. I mean, I didn't think Office Christmas Party was anything special last year. It's been a long time since it's been a good Christmas movie. Yeah. And Atomic Blonde, finally, we both agreed that it's a near miss, a little bit nearer for you than for me. I thought this was just okay and not nearly on the level of even the John Wick movies. You thought it was at least better than the last John Wick, but not nearly worthy of recommendation. Is that right?
I would recommend it for action, people who love action. You know, if you expect a story, then no.
It just evaporates so quickly the second it's over.
Yeah, but it's really such a great light show, you know, and the music as well. You know, this is the type of music that I really would have loved to have seen in something like Baby Driver.
Yes, I agree.
It really made this movie, and I loved the you know, the things like the little touches of the titles with the spray painting and stuff like that. So it's a beautifully done action movie if all you want is just action.
And beautifully done. Yeah. It plays like a trailer. I mean, let's be honest.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
That's going to wrap up our show tonight for episode 330. We want to thank you all for tuning in tonight. We'll be back with you next week with reviews of Justice League and Daddy's Home 2, amongst other new films. We want to thank you all for listening on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else you may be getting this podcast. Please go to iTunes, rate the show, review the show. We're not asking for a positive review, just for an honest one. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, warp 9. Engage!